Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Samuel Adams Returns, Those Anti-Federalists. They got it right. This is Tom DeVolis, your host, and I am delighted this week to have Matt Truella, and I got it right today, I believe, in the pronunciation, because DeVolis is always hard to say. So with Matt is joining me, and we're so delighted to have Matt as a kind of look at Matt as the father of the modern conversations on the lesser magistrates. So Matt, give us a little introduction as to who you are and maybe how you got started in this.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely, Tom. Glad to be here.
Thank you.
Well, I'm a pastor. I pastor Mercy Seat Christian Church. I've been pastoring there for 31 years.
Wow.
We have about 250 people in the congregation. Mm-hmm. I'm a husband of 40 years, almost 40 years.
Great.
Me and my wife have 11 children, 6 girls, 5 boys, and we have 23 grandchildren so far. And I head up a mission called Missionaries of the Preborn.
Okay.
And did about 15 months in jail for interposing at the doors of abortion clinics back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen 6 of the 8 death camps here in Milwaukee close down.
Wow.
And there's only 2 left, and abortion has dropped by over 60% in our state since we began. So we've really seen God do a great work. And that was really the impetus for getting into the lesser magistrate doctrine and mm-hmm. learning about it was the preborn. I was just stunned that here we're talking about murder.
Yes.
And we didn't have one governor, not one state legislature, not one mayor, not one common council. No one said no. You're not murdering people here. Yeah. Everybody went along with it. And I was stunned by that. And so when I first heard about this doctrine, I had immediate interest in it.
Mm-hmm.
Began to study about it. Learned there's like virtually nothing about it in print in the modern day. In fact, my work on the doctrine is the first work on it in over 300 years.
Yes.
And so I began to study, went out to the Library of Congress, spent days out there, did all kinds of research, and along the way got interested in this Magdeburg Confession, which was written mm-hmm. in 1550 AD, because scholars kept saying in their writings, this was the first time the doctrine was formalized, was yes. in the Magdeburg Confession.
Mm-hmm.
So I got sidetracked on that. We ended up securing a 1550 original because it had never, Tommy, I couldn't believe this. It had never been translated into English. And this is like a pivotal document for Western civilization and how we pillared our governments here in America. And no one's ever taken it. So it was written in Latin. All important theological works were then translated into the German, sent out throughout the Holy Roman Empire. But no one had ever translated into English.
That's the key issue regarding language. When I do Sam Adams' different presentations, I make it known that the founders clearly understood Latin and Greek, and they could read everything in those original languages. So when it comes to the work that you were doing with the Magdeburg Confession, it's critical to really understand that we can now read that in English, and it's critical for everyone, including pastors, to know that, because what we have is tyranny running off the charts, and we need to understand what is going on with these with the confession and being able to educate others in respect of it.
Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Okay, because something was messed up with your audio there.
Oh, sorry.
I don't know what that was. But so I didn't get to hear what you were saying.
Is that better?
Yeah, now I can hear it fine.
Okay. No, what I was mentioning was that as with Sam Adams and the founders, because Sam's my alter ego, and when I appear as him, and actually one of the tea parties had me do and talk about the lesser magistrates as Sam Adams in character. So that was real interesting. But the point is that they knew Latin. They could read and write Latin. And so they understood it very clearly. So the impetus to translate at that time was, you know, why bother? We can read and write this stuff. But, you know, our our modern time, they're mentally void, let alone unable to understand original language.
Exactly. Yeah, so we secured a 1550 original from the Bavarian State Library in Munich, Germany. And I hired a guy with a PhD in Latin and Greek from Cornell University, Christian brother, impeccable credentials. He translated the work. Mm-hmm. He was astounded by what a phenomenal document it is. And so now English-speaking people can finally read this confession 470 years later. Yeah. So that was the first time the doctrine was formalized, was in the Magdeburg Confession. So we published that in 2012, and then we published my work in 2013 on mm-hmm. the doctrine itself, which is, you know, a popular modern day writing with all the tenets of the doctrine spelled out within the book itself.
Yeah, no, I think it's a fantastic work. I came upon it early on, and I kept asking a lot of across the country as I would interact with different pastors, "Hey guys, have you ever seen this?" "No, that's not real." "Wait a minute, let's look at the historical documents, and how can you say it's not real? And let's look at history. And who was that character, Charles V or somebody like that? What was going on during that whole period of time?"
Yes.
So a little bit more. So when you brought those books to bear, mm-hmm. what was the reactions to you and, you know, to other pastors and that? Because I'm sure you wanted to share that with them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, the response from most people was, "Well, why would we do that?" You know, mm-hmm. at the beginning, back in 2013, 2014, very few people seemed to get the importance of this doctrine. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you now, Tom, like everybody sees the importance of this doctrine and how important it is and why our founders, you know, made it part of the way they pillared our government here in America,
right.
Federalism.
Mm-hmm.
And true federalism, of course, has multiple levels of government, multiple branches on each level, because our founders didn't want power to reside in one man, like the monarch, or a small group of men, like an oligarchy, like SCOTUS has become. Mm-hmm. They wanted there to be many levels of government, many branches. So if any branch or branches began to play the tyrant, another branch or branches would check them.
Yes.
And they wanted it that way because they had a Christian view of the nature of man, that yes. he's wicked and in need of a savior. Therefore, they didn't want power to reside in a small group of people. But we've lost all that. The states have become mere conduits to the federal beast. And everybody just blithely obeys whatever their authority, the magistrates I'm talking about, whatever the authority above them says, they just do it. So this teaching is massively important to show men that they're right, both from mm-hmm. scripture and history and legally. You have to yeah. show them all three.
Yes.
Interpose and defy. And just, you know, for your listeners, so they know what the doctrine is, very simply, is that when the higher ranking civil authority makes unjust or immoral law, policy, or court opinion, the lower or lesser ranking civil authority has both the God-given right and duty not to obey, and if necessary, to actively resist the unjust or immoral actions of the superior authority. Yeah. That's the doctrine. That's what they're supposed to do. And that's what we've been teaching the magistrates, and we've been seeing them do it. This whole thing with COVID has given us hundreds of examples of interposition by lesser magistrates, not at the state level. It's these governors who've been playing the tyrant, and there hasn't been one legislature in all of America that has checked a lawless governor yet, not one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what we've seen, however, at the lower level, at county level and local level, we've seen sheriffs, we've seen county boards, we've seen mayors, we've seen city councils all defy these lawless lawless actions of these governors.
Yes.
And that's been encouraging to see.
Absolutely. We're seeing some of that here in Ohio. In Ohio, the legislature did take it upon itself to pass the SB 22. I don't know if you're familiar with that one.
No.
But it does put some parameters around the actions of the governor and the administrative health department at the state level. It doesn't go far enough into really curbing it, but it formed a committee, if you will, that will oversee any type of executive order within that regard. It doesn't have enough meat. It also takes and sadly gives the governor more power in certain ways that violate the Constitution of Ohio. So that becomes interesting.
And that's what we've seen in the legislatures around the country. Mm-hmm. Instead of just stopping the evil, which is their duty, and, you know, obviously they gave too much bureaucratic power to health authorities to begin with.
Correct.
They should rescind and take away that power. Rather than do that, what they've done, Tom, is politicized and funded all this. That's what they've done.
Exactly. And And as we roll down to the last couple of minutes in this segment, and we'll carry that over into the second segment as well, is that that whole idea is that it's become a money game. And to what you expressed earlier on in the conversation, is that the states have become that funnel for the federal government in so many ways over the years. The anti-federalists predicted that, in fact. So it's interesting to see all of that. And the last, give a kind of a minute or two comment on what you are seeing in, and will carry over in some of the states that are real particular that may be something fresh in your mind as far as the actions.
Oh, absolutely. Let me just share with you a perfect example of the doctrine of lesser magistrate. And we'll probably have to carry into the next segment, but
yes,
you just tell me when to stop.
Well,
so I live in Wisconsin. Just below us is Illinois. Their governor has been a tyrant, like many of the like our governor, like your governor, you know. And so he was making, a year ago, they were making their decrees like every 72 hours. You remember that?
Yep.
Pritzker is his name. And he came out with his latest little decree last May. It was that no businessman can open their business until I say they can open their business. And now, if you open your business before I say you can, you're now going to be arrested and charged with a misdemeanor crime. Only one county out of 102 counties in Illinois, Tom, gathered their board together and put out their own decree and informed the public and the governor that their businessmen are free to open their businesses now. They then cautioned the governor and the state about interfering with them. And then they let the businessmen know that they would use all the power they possess as a county board to protect them from the governor and from the state. Well, Pritzker responded in good tyrant fashion, said, I'll take away your federal money. I'll slap you around the room. The usual thing the tyrants say. Right. And 1 week to the day later, after he's in the news threatening this little Madison County over there by the Mississippi River, the Illinois State Police issue a press release stating they will not arrest any businessman in the entire state who opens their business before Pritzker says they can open their business.
There you go.
The very next day after that, Pritzker rescinded his order. That's how the doctrine works. The lesser authorities don't join in the rebellion of the superior authority. Rather, they use their authority to check
Exactly. Exactly. And as we get into the next segment, we'll talk a little bit about some of the things that, you know, are happening here in Ohio, in our township in particular. And hopefully we're able to expand that in our county, because it's critical. And it's finding what's really important in my mind, and you can help explain that as we get in. I think that'll be the first point of topic. And as we move to the next segment is, are you finding it all within believers that are those lesser magistrates, or are we even finding some unbelievers that are understanding their role based on oath and responsibility? So that's the key elements that, as we're wrapping up in this last minute, that the founding fathers, especially the likes of Sam Adams, who is called the father of the American Revolution, as well as had several other monikers, but when they understood this doctrine very, very clearly and were able to look at it, because it was talked about from the pulpits. When we get to the next segment, I want to open with a statement from Jonathan Mayhew that he had preached, and I think you may have seen it or not, but you'll find it intriguing either way. But in doing that and hearing that from the pulpits, leadership understood their responsibilities, that they were required to be before the higher authority, the sovereign God. So did Sam Adams and the Anti-Federalists. We're going to come back with Matt in a few minutes. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this second segment of Samuel Adams Returns. Those Anti-Federalists, they got it right. And again, I'm delighted to have Matt Trueheller, right? I get it.
You got it.
He's back with us. And just before we jump back into our conversation, folks, you know, this is Liberty Works Radio Network is our prime network that we're on, and it's listener funded. So I definitely encourage you to go find that donate button, listen to all the other hosts and hostesses that are on during the rest of the week, and participate in your own liberty. Get out there and do something. As I always say, get your butts out of your seats and your feet's on the streets. So with that, Matt, I'd like to jump back just for a second that when after the Stamp Act, the Parliament went ahead and threw in these declaratory acts, and in that it had the legislative clause that says, quote, in all cases whatsoever in the Declaratory Act. And obviously the Calvinists came unglued. And with that, it was Jonathan Mayhew in 1766 in his The Snare Broken. He says this, he goes, I will not meddle with the thorny question, whether or how far it may be justified for private men at certain extraordinary conjunctures to take the administration of government in some respect into their own hands. Self-preservation being a great and primary law of nature, and to be considered an antecedent to all civil laws and institutions which are subordinate and subservient to the other, the right of so doing in some circumstances cannot well be denied. That's interesting. Powerful.
Very powerful.
Yes.
I need to get that quote from you after we get off the air, because I have to add that to my quote sections.
It'll be
phenomenal. And you bring up the Stamp Act, and people would do well, Tom, to read the history of the Stamp Act. Mm-hmm. There are literally scores and hundreds of examples of interposition by magistrates and by the people regarding the actions of the British government. It's a fascinating time of history, and it shows how it shaped the founding of our nation. Everyone thinks about that.
Yes. Yeah. I think the Stamp Act really became, you know, there were so many different things. I usually, Sam Adams, let people know that even 50 years after the colony was settled, that Massachusetts was ready to break away and revolt because of some of the things that were happening in trying to impose, once again, English or, you know, the Episcopal, the Anglican religion at that point, and they were already furious with it. But then they moved forward. But the Stamp Act, you're right, it was that whole culmination of all of the other things that were happening, and it gave great impetus for people to start standing very, very strong against tyrants and move that forward as we, 10 years later, we saw that we were in a revolution.
Yeah.
Fully. So I think we were leaving the last segment as to some of the examples that we were talking about. You mentioned that one in Illinois. That's a key example when law enforcement clearly understands where it is in its relationship to the rest of the civilians. Yeah. When we look at local government, now there was something that you shared and we actually used here in our township about one of the counties that you gave as an example that did something around Second Amendment. So we'll kind of touch on that a little bit, because we're seeing that as one of the key elements. And then we'll come back to the Chi-Com flu and how people are, you know, building that resistance at the lower magistrate level with that. So please. Sure.
This has become a flashpoint. Again, a county, Newton County, Missouri, way down in the southwest of Missouri. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of February, once they saw Biden and the Democrats all talking about guns and gun confiscation, gun registration, taxes, all kinds of laws, anything to curtail American citizens from obtaining weapons and ammunition as they probably should be able to. And So they passed an ordinance at the county level, mm-hmm. which has now had a huge impact, by the way, in Missouri. And now it's being considered next week, I believe, by their state legislature to make it a statewide law. Mm-hmm. But what they declared was that any actions by the federal government that infringe upon their citizens and within their jurisdictions, Second Amendment rights, anything from the federal government is null, void, and without authority. Secondly, they said in their ordinance that their sheriff has the authority to arrest any federal agents that try to exact unconstitutional Second Amendment laws, rules by the federal government. And thirdly, any county official who aids and abets federal agents in infringing upon the Second Amendment rights of the citizens is to be immediately removed from office.
Yes.
That's phenomenal. And that yes. has taken off. There's, I believe, over 30 counties in your state, Ohio, now that yes. are pushing this, over 20 in Florida. And it's happening in counties across America. And now we have also seen 28 states which have now brought forward laws, some better than others, but all laws to challenge or check the lawlessness of these traitors who are trying to undermine the Constitution and remove people's Second Amendment rights. This has become a flashpoint. It all started with this little county down in Southwest Missouri.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that it's huge. And you're right. There's over 30 counties here. And we're hoping that what we're doing in our township will help drive our county in that direction as well. We went through several iterations of what I think I sent to you, and what came back, even you know, that finally the trustees accepted, because as you know, when we're looking at the lesser magistrate, it also depends on their scope of authority and how far they could go and how far the people. And I think this is the critical element that we saw out of Magdeburg, and that was that the people were also then that supportive of those actions so the magistrates could fulfill their duties. And then that has to be within that scope, or it goes into that question of what Mayhew was saying, when is it then that the people take that all into their own hands? Right.
And that's an extremely important point, because it comes to the point of self-preservation. Like mm-hmm. people ask me, well, what can we do at the county level? I say, learn what you can, what the authority of the county government is in your state. There's a lot of similarities with all the states regarding the authority of county officials, but there are differences too. Yeah. And so you need to learn what it is in your state. But I always tell them this, I said, but you have to understand this thing, talking about America, things are collapsing. Lawlessness is everywhere.
Yes.
Things are collapsing so strongly. There may be times where in the days ahead where county government and local government needs to go outside whatever the state government said the parameters of their jurisdiction were, precisely because of what you just talked about with that quote from Mayhew, yes. self-preservation.
Yes.
So the importance of us as Christian people, as honest people, being a part of this process is massively important so things don't break into chaos, anarchy, all that kind of, because that's what lawlessness at the superior level always does. It brings anarchy and lawlessness within society. The lesser magistrates, by their acts of interposition, are actually trying to restore order.
Yes.
So it'll be massively important that we teach this doctrine and teach what good governance looks like. As you know, Tom, it's all been lost on Americans. We used to do election sermons.
Yes.
Those all died out in the mid-1800s with devastating effects, because now we've removed Christian thought from the matters of civil government. And now the state has lost that objective standard that checks them, which is the law of God. You can read that down through history. Western man, whether you read Alfred the Great in the 9th century, John of Salisbury in the 12th century, or William Blackstone, the most cited legal scholar by America's founders in the 18th century, they all said God's law is the higher law, right, to which all men and all governments of men are accountable.
Yeah.
So it's once you remove that objective standard, which we have in this culture, both by the church, which has thrown it under the bus, and by the magistrates, the world itself, now the magistrates or the state is able to make it up as they go, make law out of mere thin air, whim. Mm-hmm. And as you can see, it's not good, because now they've totally redefined good as evil and evil as good. So it's massively important that, you know, people understand where we're at as a nation. This thing is in a bad shape. And I see already people moving to geographical areas. People are leaving New York State in droves, for example, and moving to other states because they see things for what's happening here. People are moving out of one county into other counties where the magistrates are better, where there's community to build with, because the leftists who are in power, they have known, if you know anything about left, I grew up in Detroit. You can't appease a tyrant.
That's right.
You have to confront and defeat them. That is your only option.
And we've given up on that. Right. Yeah. And so, you know, just with that, and we'll continue into the third segment on talking about that from the pulpits again and what's happening there. But that's the real critical element, is that clear understanding that we have to stand and we have to fight. And that's the, I always say, the Bass Ackwards understanding of Romans 13, which I like to share. I just saw that the guys up there on the Law of Nature and NaturesGod.com, which they have a couple of your videos up there if you haven't seen that yet. But they do a real good job and summation of Romans 13 and clear thinking as well. So are you familiar with those guys over there?
I am not.
Oh, I'll send you that link as well.
Thank you.
Because I'll tell you, for the folks that are listening, if you want a solid biblical law understanding, that's a site that I always quote. In fact, I've used them in referencing some things in one of my books. So it's always good to see the work that they're always bringing out. But with that, it goes to the point of what you're saying, is that we had that understanding. We no longer have that understanding. And how are you seeing that? And we'll follow this again, because I let it go, was that in what we're seeing in these transitions, what's the balance of, or what's the difference of non-Christian magistrates to Christian magistrates that are acting on this doctrine, whether they, especially the non-Christians, understand it or not?
Sure. Yeah. From my perspective, and I hear from people all over the country because of my book, so I get kind of a bird's eye view. Mm-hmm. I would say it's about 50-50. About half of them are unbelievers. About half of them are believers. What's encouraging to me, Tom, is I've tried to tell people for years now, quit focusing on D.C. D.C. Mm-hmm. is the problem. Look at county, local, and state government. Put your efforts there. And what these men meant for evil with all the election fraud and everything, I'm from Wisconsin, we all know there was massive election fraud here. What they meant for evil in stealing the election, I see God using for good. Yeah. For the first time, I see massive amounts of people who are no longer transfixed on the next presidential election are totally focused rather on county and local government, and to some extent, state government. Yeah. It's encouraging to see.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that I always let people know is that Sam Adams, that was one of his fundamental statements, was all politics is local, and that, you know, taking care of the local, making sure the community is embedded well, even to the extent when he was the chairman for the Committee of Safety in Massachusetts, in the Boston area in particular, the whole idea was to help people learn how to defend themselves, how to be able to preserve their own being, and do it in a biblical way, not in ways that are angry. Because Sam Adams, one of his monikers being the last Puritan, he was, you know, very, very solid in that respect. We're down to the last minute, so I'm going to capitalize on the time, Matt, as we look at that. But, you know, those are the critical points that I really appreciate what you said there on what you're getting, that bird's eye view of the 50-50 split. And when the inherent see of God into the hearts and conscience, and it's really important, that's the Reformation perspective that all of our early pastors were saying, it's in that conscience that shows the good, what God wants for his law on what's right and wrong. And when you go outside of that, because of our sinful natures, then we see all of the insanities and the evil perpetrate itself in every direction. So it's incumbent on us to understand that. Sam Adams understood that. those anti-Federalists understood that. That's something that they debated the Federalists with in so many words. And I think we understand it. We're going to come back in the next segment to finish up. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to Samuel Adams Returns. Those anti-Federalists, they got it right. And I want to welcome back those Screaming Eagles down there in Lima, Ohio, with none other than Soaring Eagle Radio. Sure appreciate Pastor Mike and Kathy and everything you guys have going on in Lima. And I'm so delighted right now that we're returning with Matt here, and we're going to continue that conversation in particular of even the conscience of men when tyranny presses on us heavily, that non-believing magistrates can be affected in a very positive way. Is that a good summation, Matt?
That's an excellent summation, and you're absolutely right. I've had that at an experiential personal level numerous times when I've sat down with non-Christian magistrates and explained to them the situation and talked to them from a Christian man's perspective, from a churchman's perspective. And you have no idea how some of these men see the goodness of what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And that's the truth of the matter is Christianity, you know, impacts the individual, but Christianity also impacts the nation.
Yes.
And that's important to understand. And men can see it when you talk about these kinds of things, because right now they see the breakdown. They see the lawlessness. And they see that the words you're saying make sense. And so they want to be a part of it to fix that.
Yeah. No, I think that's fabulous, you know, being able to get the message out. And the other side, the exciting point is more pulpits are becoming friendly to this, and which requires for many of them to take another look of what does Romans 13 actually say, and you know, what is its context in history? How's that being received? But, you know, I know we touched on it briefly in the first segment, but you know, what are you seeing now across the different? And also with that, is how much is the difference between denominational, the larger denominations and that, and some large major independents in receptiveness versus, as I'm seeing it, more with the localized churches?
Yeah. The overall churchman in America and throughout the West is still blithe obedience to the state, no matter what. Overwhelming majority. But in the midst of that situation, over the last year, there are a huge segment, a large segment, still in the vast minority, but way many more now, churchmen re-examining Romans 13, re-looking at, you know, our relationship with the state, realizing they no longer have the convenience of just saying that slogan, "We always obey," you know, because they see how lawless the state can become. Right. For example, you know, James Coates Church, the pastor up in Canada, who now has a huge fence, multiple fences around his building from the government, spent several weeks in jail. They read my book on the doctrine of lesser magistrate. An elder from the church called me after James was arrested and ordered a bunch of books. And he goes, 6 weeks ago, we didn't even know what the doctrine of lesser magistrate was. Yeah. And but they understood their duty as soon as they saw it from the word of God. And that young man did exactly what needed to be done.
Yes.
And his sermon that he preached on Romans 13, which is very excellent, very well done. That thing has over 200,000 views. And I asked the elder, how many people usually watch his sermons? He said, oh, 200 to 300. So he's like, so what, again, what they meant for evil, you see God using for, they gave this young man a voice.
Yes.
Hundreds of thousands of people with the proper message of Romans 13.
Yeah. And that's the exciting, that's what's really exciting is that, you know, we're able to see that and people becoming really reawakened to what our founders clearly understood. I have told many pastors in the past, I said, so based on what you believe on Romans 13, you wouldn't even be here today, or you'd be having a different definite accent in your voice, and you'd be paying your taxes and allegiance, not, you know, to your state or to even DC, but you'd be paying it to England. Well, yeah. What are you talking about? You know, so they're stymied because they don't even understand their history. So where would you say, or what was the impetus for that breakdown? I know you mentioned about not having the election day sermons, but what else in that course of history gave that impetus to move away from what our founders heard from the pulpits to what we've experienced in particular over the last 100 years?
Yeah, well, just I refer to it as pietism, and I'm not talking about piety. I'm talking about pietism. It was a movement that started in the late 17th century.
Yeah.
And so what it was a beginning where churchmen wanted to take Christianity from the public realm and make it purely a private matter. Mm-hmm. And of course, each succeeding generation took it further and further from the public matter to the private matter, to where we're at nowadays, where the pietists, your average churchman, you know, if they're in a fight at all, it's, you know, trying to keep Christ in the name Christmas, right? Yeah. They've abandoned the field for so long, Tom, and it's a disaster because they don't want to, and they don't want to talk about civil government matters from the Word of God, which God's Word speaks to all matters, including matters of civil government, because Christian men have abandoned that realm, or the Christian men who are in that realm, because their pulpits don't speak about it, they govern no differently than their secular colleagues.
There you go.
Yeah. And so it's a massive, huge problem. And I'll tell you right now, we refer to it as the mission to the magistrates. Those involved in civil government, that is a mission field. And they need to be brought the teachings of the Bible regarding their role, their functions, their limits, and, you know, what makes for good governance and on down the line. Massively important for us to do as churchmen. But this whole pietism thing actually takes pride in not being involved in political or civil government matters. And they've even, you know, put up a bunch of slogans to make any Christian who wants to get involved in those matters feel unspiritual, to try to neutralize them. The foremost, and I could give you a bunch, but I won't. If people want to learn more about what I'm talking about, they can go to our website, defytyrants.com. I have this thing right on the homepage, why pastors aren't involved.
Yep.
Give you history about it and go through some more of the slogans. But the number one is, we should just preach the gospel. Every time you talk about helping the preborn, defending marriage, helping a good guy get elected, getting rid of the Federal Reserve, whatever it may be, you know, immediately they say, oh, we should just preach the gospel. Yeah. You have to dismantle that. And it's very easy to do. And I show people how to dismantle each one of these slogans. But on this one, the first thing you have to respond and say is, well, that's a red herring. Nobody just preaches the gospel. Do you ever spend time with your wife? Ever take your kids for a walk? You ever use the restroom? You know, so nobody just preaches the gospel.
Right.
Secondly, notice when you say we should just preach the gospel, when they say we should do that, when the next potluck is announced, notice if anyone jumps up and says, well, wait a minute, we should just preach the gospel. Or when the church softball team's being organized, have you ever seen someone say, oh, wait a minute, we should just preach the gospel? No, they don't. Only when you bring up civil government matters do they say that little slogan, because it's meant to put a wet blanket over you, to make you feel unspiritual, and so that you depart and retreat from civil government matters. That's what the church has been doing for over 150 years with dire consequences in our nation now. I always end up back at the pulpits, Tom. When I look at the evil in our land and I go, how did we get here? I always end up back at the pulpits.
Yeah. And my listeners will well note that I said that was the real difference between the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists. The Federalists expected the pulpits to do their job so we would always have a moral and virtuous people. Whereas the Anti-Federalists said, no, we're a bunch of sinners and we can't even trust the pulpits to maintain that, because they were seeing Unitarianism coming in and everything that, you know, you just noted already, you know, coming into play. And they're going, no, we better take and make sure we have that Bill of Rights type of thing back in this whole idea of a constitution. And that to me,
our the hero in our home from the Anti-Federalists is Patrick Henry.
Oh, yeah.
He's our favorite Anti-Federalist. We've been to Red Hill in Virginia where, you know, he's buried. And but Sam Adams is right up there. I love hearing you talk about this because so many people have no idea. You know, you bring up the Federalists versus the Anti-Federalists with most people, and they're like, who were what? You know, so it's good that you're teaching people these things.
Exactly. It comes down to the same point of everything you're saying with what happened with the magistrates. It is that during the foundation, they clearly understood that God was sovereign and that every magistrate was to be in front of God. In fact, I was one of when I was looking at 1689, the revolution in Massachusetts, if you're aware of that, was because they had a bad governor. Andros was a bad governor, and he was a tyrant. And at the same time, he was a Puritan. So he was a Puritan tyrant. And the people finally said, no, we're not going to put up with that. And they had an armed revolution. No shots were fired, but they had an armed revolution in Boston, Massachusetts, during that time. And even to the effect that the Glorious Revolution in England recognized the actions in the colonies as justified, and the Parliament and the King understood all of that because they were having their same issues. What's really interesting is that the ministry aspect you're talking about to the magistrates, because that's necessary, because they don't understand the level of sovereignty relating to God. In the last 2 minutes here going on, please identify your website, the ministry, and how folks can help you get this thing moving forward.
Sure, absolutely. Well, our website is defytyrants.com, and very simple to remember that. We used to be called lesser magistrate.com. Nobody could remember that. So we changed it to defytyrants.com. Nobody ever questions that. We have a YouTube channel, and some of the things have been thrown off by YouTube. And we also have a channel at Gab, G-A-B. And so it's Defy Tyrants channel, either at YouTube or at Gab. We have more stuff up at YouTube than we do at Gab at this point. Also, if people are interested in my sermons, you can go to sermonaudio.com and just type in my name on the speaker button. And you see all kinds of sermons. Also, we have a YouTube channel for my sermons where we live stream. And that is called Matt Truella. And so you can avail yourself to that. I just did a sermon on this called The Shot and the Tyranny of Man 3 weeks ago. And YouTube took it down when it got to about 5,000 views. But I've found it on numerous other platforms, and it's had at least 30,000 listens at this point. Okay. And so I'm a preacher who goes through a book at a time. I'm on our 41st book. I've been at the same church for 31 years. But then I break it up with topical sermons in between. That's our contact info. And I'll tell you, if people want to know the least expensive way to impact your magistrates, at our defytyrants.com site, or just go to sermonaudio.com, I have a sermon that I preach to the Montana legislature. They're the only ones still do an election sermon out of all 50 states. Brother out there resurrected it 20 years ago or so. So they had me come in and preach on the doctrine right there in the rotunda of the Capitol. 40-something legislators were there back in 2015. That is a great tool because a lot of churchmen and a lot of magistrates are very busy. They won't read. But if you give them something to listen to, they'll listen. And we found that sermon, then they want to read the book. Also, if people want to get bulk copies of the book, contact me directly, because I can get them to you for like way cheaper than you can get them on Amazon or at our website or anything like that.
Hey, Matt, it has been very exciting having you on today. I've been privileged to go around Northern Ohio giving presentations on the lesser magistrates, not just from your book, but from the works of others that have capitalized on what you've brought to the forefront. You know, Sam Adams was living the doctrine of the lesser magistrate, our founders of the revolution, were living the lesser magistrate doctrine as well. Sam became the founder of the American Revolution, and those anti-federalists, they got it right. So folks, come on back next week, and we'll have a really good time here at Samuel Adams Returns. Those anti-federalists, they did. They absolutely got it right.